This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 11th at 11 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like we'll actually follow state law and pass a budget.
What an idea. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at the Ohio Snollygosters, or the shrewd politicians who look for your votes, delay votes on state budgets, say dirty movies are a public health crisis. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, how pornography is more of a public health hazard than gun violence, at least in the eyes of some lawmakers.
But first, one of Ohio's few Democratic members of Congress has a challenger, and it's coming from the left. Congresswoman Joyce Beatty represents much of the city of Columbus in the heavily gerrymandered 3rd District. It's highly unlikely a Republican would ever beat her, but she's not getting a pass in 2020.
No, she's not. She faces a primary challenge from Morgan Harper. At 36 years old, Harper is a political newcomer. She has a compelling story and impressive resume. Born into foster care, she was raised by an immigrant who was a Columbus school teacher. She went to Columbus Academy, got her bachelor's from Tufts University in Boston, a master's from Princeton, a law degree from Stanford. She worked 3 years at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Under one of our favorite punching bags, Rich Cordray, who we love, but can be easy to make fun of. Harper comes to the table with some ideas that are pretty far left, to be honest, supporting free college tuition, universal basic income, Medicare for all, a jobs guarantee, what she calls systemic reparations for African Americans. And Morgan Harper joins us now in studio. Welcome to Snollygoster.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Joyce Beatty, pretty popular congresswoman, well-known in her district. She served Central Ohio in the state legislature and now in Congress for more than 20 years combined. What would you bring to Congress that she does not?
Well, I think where I'm coming from on this really does connect to who I am. So, you know, you guys referenced a little bit there in my story. I come at these issues from a very personal place. I grew up here. I got a lot of lucky breaks, got an opportunity to go to Columbus Academy. But that also kind of opened my eyes up to a situation that we have here in Central Ohio and other places, to how much of your outcomes as a person in our society are driven by the circumstances of your birth, who your parents happen to be, what neighborhood you're in, and what school district you're in, all of that. And, you know, I've pretty much been on a mission since then to try to do what I can to change that. You know, what started as volunteerism when I was younger moved into, oh, wait, you know, I'm in college. There's this thing called public policy. Oh, wait, you know, we need to figure out, like, how we can use public policy to make it easier for people to get ahead. So I think I'm coming at this from a place of, you know, personal experience, professional experience, working at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and ultimately in my last gig at a community development organization where I saw how things are not necessarily getting ready for working people and understanding the policies that could do something about the situations we're seeing.
Those are all things that Joyce Beatty touts as well. Work for help for the working people, people of low means, people of color. So how would a voter differentiate you from her?
Well, I think what we have to look at is what are we seeing in the district? And I think, you know, when you look at the numbers in the district, poverty is at, you know, over 30%. Black poverty is higher. You have children that are living in poverty over 30% as well in our area in Franklin County. And what are we going to do about it? You know, and a lot of the incremental policy approaches that we've seen over the last 30 or so years over my lifetime don't seem to be getting the results that will actually make it easier for working people to get by. Or if you do get by, it's just because perhaps in addition to, you know, work and all of that, that you haven't had that financial catastrophe that has set you off on a course that you can't recover from. So I think what we need now is a new generation of leadership that's ready to push for those bold policies that we know will make a difference. And so that's what you're seeing in my platform, is things that will impact people's bottom lines and make it easier for all of us, which, you know, I would say we are all in this, that we would benefit from good health care, making enough money to live. We know what the basics are that people need to live successful lives and to give children an opportunity to be successful, however they define it. And we need to be pushing for that now.
You're a young woman of color. You support the Green New Deal. You are challenging the Democratic establishment. You sound a lot like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, to be quite frank. Do you like that comparison? I mean, do you think you are like her?
Well, I'm supportive of all women who are mm-hmm. pushing for justice for others. I'm supportive of all women of color, black, brown women who are doing that. I admire greatly, you know, her ability to advance the issues of working people. But I'm Morgan Harper.
Sure,
I'm from Berwick.
She's kind of become the face of this young new movement in Congress.
Yes.
And you're in line with that.
Well, like I said, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm building a grassroots campaign here in Columbus, Ohio, but I am supportive of all people who are advancing
the goal
the
is
issues.
To get to Congress and to find groups to caucus with to bring change. So, I mean, that's the goal. You have to find your set once you get to Congress. That's
exactly. Yeah. As soon as I win, I'm just going to start connecting with people who are interested in these same policy ideas mm-hmm. and building coalitions to actually push these ideas into legislation.
Are you concerned about pushback from established leaders like Nancy Pelosi?
No, I'm concerned about normal people who can vote for me. And I want to connect with them and make sure that their voice is being heard in Congress and that's translating into legislation that will help their everyday lives and make it easier for them to get ahead.
So what exactly is your number one issue?
I would say the issue that's closest, we have our whole platform, mm-hmm. but financial stability is really important to me. You know, early in my childhood experience, I saw what it was like when you see a parent who's struggling to make enough money to support a family. I know what it's like when you have unexpected situations hit your family and how, you know, you just kind of pray you don't have another medical bill that comes that might make it hard to meet the rest of the bills for the month. So making sure that people who are working hard and have children are able to earn enough money to be okay and they don't have to pray for that medical emergency that never comes or be superhuman. That's what is the issue, this issue of economic segregation in different neighborhoods determining the outcomes of your life that are most important.
So you're saying a lot of things there, but economic stability and all of your ideas tie into that? Is that fair? Things like Medicare for all, universal income, is that what everything comes to is financial stability.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. And that's why we kind of like, you know, if you look on the website at morganharper.org, you'll see the platform. It's bucketed in that way, because I think, like I said, we know what people need to be stable. They need to be making enough money to support their families. They need to be making enough money to access housing and afford housing. As we see in Columbus, it's becoming, you know, increasingly expensive for certain types of people, especially renters, rents going up, all of that, to be able to access housing. And we need people to be able to have health care that will not send them off the rails if they have a doctor's expense or, you know, and even the healthcare that is available, it's still expensive, right? Like my mom, you know, currently on Medicare, sees her premiums continue to increase, drug prices are high. So, that's why I've bucketed all of those issues together, because I think they're the core of making sure that people can have stable financial lives.
If we can start with Medicare for all, I think we might have had it 20, 30 years ago if it wasn't so expensive and hard to do. How do you pay for it?
It's the United States of America. We find a way to pay for things all the time. Iraq war.
Do you have a strategy? Do you have a strategy for paying for
it? No, like I said, I mean, if I'm elected, when I'm elected, we get to Congress, we do the work of figuring out how it all gets done. But right now, we need a new generation of bold leadership that is going to advocate to get these things done. Mm-hmm. And then you figure out all the details. But right now, we need to just accept that this is what is going to make our society work better if all people can access health care.
Let's go back to that universal income and the jobs guarantee. What do you mean by those two terms, jobs guarantee and a universal income?
So in universal income, you know, where I'm coming at with that is we have the facts that like $400, you know, a $400 expense or a gap in the monthly expenses for someone is happening to a not insignificant percentage of the population, right? And then that could lead to other financial difficulties in their lives. Kind of crazy, right? Like $400 could send a family to eviction or whatever. So let's not make people jump through as many bureaucratic hoops to be able to access a very relatively small amount of money. Let's make sure that people are getting money to make sure that they can stabilize their families. And also in a world where increasingly, you know, automation and other things are going to make it difficult to earn enough money to meet those expenses.
So does this mean the government cuts everybody a check under a certain income level for $1,000 a month? Is that basically what you're talking about?
It could be. Yeah.
The Green New Deal says that those are for folks who are unable or unwilling to work. Where do you fall on that? Especially on the unwilling side. You know, because right now most people believe if to earn an income, you should have a basic income, but you have to work and you have to do something to earn that. Now, if you're disabled or you're incapacitated, too old to work, then that's different. But where does your unwilling to work definition lie?
I don't know if I have a definition of that, but I do know that, you know, for most people, there are challenges that happen, and we shouldn't be, you know, punishing people if you have, like, mental health problems that make it hard to keep a 9-to-5, 40 hours a week, every single week, because ultimately that impacts all of us, right? Even if it doesn't feel that it's that direct, you know, with, you know, public health issues, safety issues, all of that, we end up seeing the cost of that. So being able to think strategically about how to fend off some of those problems that end up costing us more down the line is what I'm interested in.
When you get to Congress, one issue might be the impeachment of President Trump. It's been bandied about. Nancy Pelosi has stopped just short of calling for impeachment. A lot of other Democrats in Congress have. Where do you come down on the possible impeachment or non-impeachment of President Trump?
I think we should impeach him.
And your justification would be?
He has broken the law and he's a disgrace to this country.
And how has he broken the law?
Through all the things that we've already learned about, through the election and all of that.
Even though the Senate is unlikely to convict, you still would in favor impeachment on the House side. So he would not be thrown out of office. He would be impeached, much like Bill Clinton was back in the 90s. And he actually came out stronger politically because of that. You're still willing to take that chance?
I think we have to take a stand on that.
You also support what you call systemic reparations for African Americans. What are systemic reparations?
So what I mean by that and with reparations is we have the evidence already that there have been centuries of, you know, discrimination against Black people in this country. We know that there's been the denial of wealth accumulation. We have the stats that the average Black family has $9,000 of wealth and the average white family has $132,000 of wealth. So, you know, that those are the facts. Let's figure out how to address that. Again, you know, the details we can get into, but systemic reparations to me would be coming up with a package of ideas that would help to remedy that huge wealth discrepancy that we're seeing.
So you're not talking about, again, cutting a check. It's programs to help close that gap, that income gap, that wealth gap.
It could be all of those things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Getting back to how we pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
Would you support raising taxes on middle class, working class people? I'm talking about folks making as little as say $40,000 or $50,000 a year. Because if Medicare for all, free college tuition at public schools, a jobs guarantee, a universal income, reparations, systemic reparations, and things like that, it's all going to cost money. You got to pay for it. It's either pay for it now or run out the debt even more. Would you support a tax increase on, frankly, most Americans to pay for these things, which you think would help society as a whole?
I mean, I think we would need to increase revenue to pay for them. And I wouldn't be targeting middle class people who have already seen the burden of the corporate tax reform that we've seen recently. So, no, I would be looking at, you know, other ways that aren't going to increase the burden on working families. But we would need, you know, to be able to pay for them.
So you support something like Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax or what Bernie Sanders is talking about, taxing the ultra wealthy, that kind of thing.
Potentially, yeah.
Speaking of Bernie Sanders, would you call yourself a socialist or a democratic socialist?
I mean, I am supportive of ideas that are going to help normal people. I'm not that into, you know, the labels and all of that. Mm-hmm. I'm still seeing what's going on with the different presidential candidates. But, you know, I'm supportive of people who bring issues of normal working people to the forefront every day.
You've only been in the race a little over a week at this point, I think. Mm-hmm. How's the response been?
It's been great. Yeah, I mean, we're getting a lot of incoming requests to help us volunteer, be part of the grassroots campaign. So I'm very excited. And, you know, it's been fantastic so far.
Well, what is your, I mean, let's talk politics here for a minute. Joyce Beatty's a very well-known politician, very strong, very well-liked. Her husband also been a community servant, he's been in community service for his whole career. That's a heavy lift to mm-hmm. defeat an incumbent, but also a popular incumbent here in Franklin County. How do you plan to do that? Are you going to rely on grassroots? How much money do you think you have to raise?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to do what it takes. I think, you know, like I said, it's a grassroots campaign, but also the issues that we're talking about, I think, do appeal to a majority of people in the 3rd District. And so I'm, you know, optimistic, and we're already, like I said, getting that feedback that's positive. So I think we will be able to build a very broad coalition of support and raise enough money to support connecting with all those people.
I'm guessing OSU students will be a target of your campaign. Much of the district is in the OSU campus.
They're in the district, so everybody in the district is going to be a target, but certainly, you know, hoping to connect with as many young people as possible, especially.
How is fundraising going so far?
Fundraising is going really well. Yeah, yeah. So we're just, you know, continuing to talk to people, let them know about what we're building here, and it seems like it's really appealing for folks.
Morgan Harper, Democratic candidate for Congress in Ohio's 3rd District, now held by Democrat Joyce Beatty. We hope to have Ms. Beatty on soon. In the meantime, she did release a statement on your challenge, which reads, quote, "I look forward to running in 2020 and serving the people of Ohio's 3rd Congressional District. Throughout my entire career, both personally and professionally, I have fought for better jobs, better wages, and a brighter future for the people, and I promise to continue to do so each and every day here in Central Ohio and in Congress." Morgan Harper, thanks again.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
We'll be right back.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
So Morgan Harper certainly seems like an impressive young woman, very sharp, great resume. Certainly an uphill battle, though, taking on someone like Joyce Beatty.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising that Joyce Beatty has a challenger, but I guess this is the type of challenger you would expect. Someone I'm pretty far left of
for
her.
That district, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she kind of bristled a bit at the comparison with AOC, but the comparison is going to be made. They're very similar in both in life story and in politics. So, and, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez beat a 10-term incumbent to win her seat in 2018. Whether Joyce Beatty is as vulnerable as Joe Crowley was in New York City, I don't know. It's going to be a tough hill to climb, but it should be interesting to watch how this plays out.
I don't see Joyce Beatty as vulnerable at all. I guess she's not vulnerable until she is vulnerable. So, I mean, you don't know what Morgan Harper is going to bring to the table strategically. You don't know how that's – who knows, right? Yeah. People catch fire. Politics change. Everything that happens in politics happens because something happened just before that. So if things change. We're a long way from the primary. I've seen crazier things. Donald Trump is our president.
Yes, she is. She is on this wave of that liberal Democrats, progressive Democrats are riding that is fueling Bernie Sanders' campaign, Elizabeth Warren's campaign to a certain degree. So if that wave continues, I can see her having a shot. Beatty is definitely the favorite.
Sure. The only weakness I would think with her campaign is she doesn't know how she's going to pay for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
both the campaign and her programs.
That's a big question. I mean, right. I mean, I don't mean her campaign. I mean the program she's proposing. These are incredible lifts. I mean, free college tuition. It's a lot of money, and then we'll figure it out when we get there. I mean, that's. I appreciate her ambitiousness, but I don't.
Well, that's the criticism for all of those plans.
Yeah,
Elizabeth Warren's plans.
That's going to be a hard thing to defend on the campaign trail. We'll figure it out when we get there.
But a lot of politicians have made promises and not paid for them when they got there. So anyway, it's time for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, honoring a shrewd politician or a shrewd political move.
First, we should say that we don't necessarily support the porn industry. It is protected speech, but it does objectify people, mainly women. It exploits participants, mainly women again. It's really not a pleasant industry.
Yes, the porn industry, not good. Whatever. But there is no doubt. So because of that, there is no doubt that our Snollygoster of the Week probably has her heart in the right place. She's trying to fight exploitation, objectification of women, human trafficking, all that which may occur in the porn industry. But we suspect ulterior motives, and we detect some inconsistency.
State Representative Jenna Powell of Western Ohio has sponsored a bill that would classify pornography as a public health crisis. It wouldn't change state law, it would just make a resolution that porn is a public health crisis. She and 18 other lawmakers say the use of porn is tied to sex trafficking and sexual abuse and harms families, puts children at risk of porn addiction. The measure is basically a resolution. Again, doesn't have the force of law. Powell says they do not want to ban pornography, just raise awareness.
A health crisis is when girls are being sex trafficked. A health crisis is when women are being abused. And a health crisis is when a 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old child is having pornography that's an addictive substance being put in front of their face.
But should we label offensive material a public health crisis when lawmakers have not labeled other things public health crises, like, say, gun violence? And Fisher asked Representative Powell that very question this week on WOSU's All Sides program.
Some have called for gun violence to be declared a public health crisis and studied in very much the same way you're suggesting pornography be studied. How do you compare that with pornography? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. So, you know, first off, that's really difficult for the families and individuals that have suffered.
I mean, children get exposed to guns and accidentally shoot themselves all the time.
Right, right. So, yeah, you know, first off, you know, we can't flippantly just pass by that from the families that really have hardship from these things. But that's really not what we're talking about at all in this resolution.
No, I know it's not what you're talking about, but I'm still trying to get to the bottom of what constitutes a public health crisis. So I'm wondering, that's another society issue that's been brought up as a public health crisis. People are dying every day. 310 are shot every day in the U.S.
That's correct. That's correct. And as I said, that's, you know, obviously not something great. I am a firm supporter of our Second Amendment rights. But what we're talking about specifically in this resolution is that, you know, the United States has the number one demand for sex trafficking in the world. We have a huge abuse of women and minors in our community. So what we're looking at is saying, let's look at this.
So there we go, Mike. Gun violence, not great, according to Jenna Powell.
Yeah, that's where I think they lose something here. That's where the snollygosterish comes in. If this is a public health crisis, then gun violence certainly is a public health crisis. If you're going to be labeling crises, let's do them both.
I don't think a conservative Republican in the Ohio legislature is going to declare gun violence a public health crisis.
And that's where the Snollygoster of the Week award comes in.
She has to get reelected. Let's be honest. I mean, Jenna Powell is not going to. Anne asked the right question there. That's a great question by Anne. It's a question that Jenna Powell really can't answer.
Sure,
I mean, what's she going to say, that gun violence should be? She can't. It would be politically bad. It doesn't work out for her to answer that question.
Of course not. But that's the shrewdness of it.
I know. Anyway, if you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, you can send it to snollygoster@wosu.org. You can also leave us a good review on iTunes, tell your buddies about us. Whatever you have to do to get the word out. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.